This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's been 3 months and a day since the April 15th Boston Marathon bombings. We're going to spend some time now looking back on that day and forward to lessons learned with someone who has a unique perspective on this singular event in our community's history, Boston Police Commissioner Edward Davis. He's joining us in the studio. Commissioner Davis, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Meghna.
So listeners, you can call in with your questions for Commissioner Davis on the Boston bombings and also on crime, law enforcement, and policing in general in the city. Give us a call with your questions. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment online through Twitter at Radio Boston as well. Well, Commissioner Davis, I know we've got the luxury now and the fortune of being 3 months and a day after that day in April. And so that gives us a different sort of feel and perspective to a conversation like this. But I still think that people would love to hear your story of what happened on that day, because you were in such a particular position being the commissioner, police commissioner for the city of Boston. So can you just remind us, where were you and how did you first hear about the bombs that went off on Boylston Street?
Sure. I was, I had been at the finish line actually when the race started, and the elite runners came across and finished the race in a fashion that we follow every year. We had the male and female winners, and Governor Patrick was there and crowned the winners with the laurel wreath. And then some of the more regular runners started to come across. Mm-hmm. I was there for about an hour or so, and then I left to take a call. I had a business call that I had to be on for a period of time.
I understand that business call was with Vice President Biden.
That's
about gun control legislation.
That's right. The Vice President was assembling a group of police chiefs. There were five or six of us on a conversation with him about that issue, and so we were talking about that. And that took 45 minutes to an hour. Yeah. So I just hung the phone up, and the phone rang again, and it was my chief of department, Dan Linsky, and he said to me, hey, boss, we've got two explosions. We're getting reports from the finish line. He happened to be in Kenmore Square. He was racing back in a police car to Boylston Street. And so he started to describe to me what he was hearing on the radio. One of our great experienced sergeants, Dan Keeler, was there. And Danny was yelling for help and for all the ambulances that he could get. And so we realized that this was a very serious situation.
Now, was it at that point when Superintendent Linsky was on the line with you and he was describing what he saw? Because I've read that the minute that he told you that there were amputations or severe injuries of that nature, that you knew this was something more than, say, a gas explosion.
Right. He said that there were multiple amputations of legs, and to me, that was most likely a low-placed IED. In my mind, knowing the territory there and the various hazards that exist in those areas, to me, that's the only thing that could have caused that. So I formed an opinion very early that it was a terrorist attack.
Now, at what time did you get back to the scene?
It took me about 12 to 15 minutes to get there. I was there actually while they were still loading some patients into the patrol wagons that they used as makeshift ambulances.
Yeah. And when you arrived and saw the carnage and the chaos, like, what was your first reaction?
Well, I felt much like I did on 9/11 actually when I saw that second plane hit the building. It's clearly terrible injuries. People that were badly hurt and a large volume of blood it was a battlefield scene what I saw and a very powerful bomb.
Yeah. You know, you are the man who said that in the aftermath of the actual bombing that this was the largest, most complicated crime scene in the city's history. Was it also the most complicated largest event that you had to oversee in your career?
Yes, without a doubt. There were thousands of police, federal agents, and military personnel that had assembled to assist us with this investigation, and it was a 12 or 13 block crime scene that had to be secured in what is the busiest business district in New England.
Yeah.
This was, there's no doubt, this is the biggest scene I'd ever been at.
Now, Ed Davis, I'm not quite sure how to ask this because your demeanor is usually, even on a very calm day, it's so steady. But your steadiness is something that people were remarking on in the period of that week. But for you, internally, did you have to steel yourself, you know, moment by moment? How did you sort of get in the zone to deal with this situation?
It's certainly a troubling thing to see. And I think when I arrived there, there was a moment where I sort of thought about the aftermath of this and the various things that would happen in the normal course of an investigation of this magnitude that had such an effect on our city. But the truth is, I've had an enormous amount of experience. I've traveled overseas. I've worked with the Metropolitan Police in London. I was schooled in how they handled their investigation into the tube bombing in 2005.
Right.
And so after I've been at Scotland Yard, met with the commissioner. He laid out the case to us, how they investigated it, what the bombs looked like, and how they put it together. And so I think that was very helpful to me when I arrived at the scene, because I know that there's a process, and I just started that process.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned London, because I also wanted to ask you about the fact that, you are a career police officer. You got your start as a beat cop, right, in Lowell?
Correct, yeah.
And then worked your way up to leading the Lowell Police Department before coming here. Mm-hmm. Was there anything about that actual on-the-ground experience from your early days policing that kicked in as well during that week of the bomb?
Sure. I mean, you're a product of all your experiences, and so I have a personal knowledge of how the police feel when they're dealing with something like this, because I've been there. And I've never worked something of this magnitude, but I have a sense for how the cops feel. I've worked with the community for 35 years, and I know how difficult this is from that perspective. And, you know, working for Mayor Menino over the last 6 or 7 years has really been an education for me in what it takes to operate a large city. And so all of those things came together during the course of this thing.
Mm. Now, there's a lot more questions I want to ask you about the actual policing that happened. But before we sort of leave your perspective of that very first day, was there a point in the course of those first hours where you just thought to yourself, this is actually happening, and it's happening in my city?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, over and over again, that comes to your mind when you're in the middle of something like this. I mean, it's really an awesome responsibility to have to deal with something of this magnitude. And so every once in a while you'd get caught up in that thought. But the truth of the matter is, There were so many decisions that had to be made, and so much information coming in, that it was really important to stabilize the scene, stabilize the victims, and then make sure that we were trying to. Our main goal was to prevent any further attacks, and so a lot had to be done, and so. Reflecting on it had to be put aside.
Yeah. Listeners, we're speaking with Boston Police Commissioner Edward Davis about the week of the Boston Marathon bombings and the manhunt that followed, about lessons learned from that experience. We'll also talk in a little bit about crime and this summer and policing in general in Boston. Commissioner Davis, just a few minutes ago, you mentioned about the fact that a lot of coordination had to happen between a lot of agencies. And I was looking back at what happened in those first hours after the bombing. And correct me if I'm wrong, but ultimately, people set up in the West End, right, in Copley Square, and what, more than 1,000 investigators were working out of the third and fourth floors of the West End alone? That gives you a sense as to like how immediately law enforcement came together.
Right. There were probably 20 of us that walked into that hotel room, that hotel function room, at maybe 10 minutes past 3. And by 4 o'clock, there were hundreds of officers there, and that swelled into at least 1,000. Not only investigators, but we had military personnel from the National Guard that were helping us secure the crime scene. So, All of those resources were under my command for a period of 5 or 6 hours. Then the FBI took over the investigation, which is statutorily the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So we were all prepared for that to happen. But that there was an enormous amount of resources that came together quickly.
Yeah, I noticed this interesting piece of writing in the Boston Globe, and they wrote that, quote, it was the beginning of days of intense cooperation between local and federal agencies that sometimes turned fractious but ended with the state and city officials praising the FBI's handling of the case. We've heard a lot of that praise, and we'll talk a little bit about that more about that in a moment. But this word fractious, do you agree? Was it fractious at times, and if so, when?
No, I don't think it was. I think fractious is an exaggeration of what really happened. We had an incredibly cooperative environment here. The three main investigative people on this, Rick DeLaurier, myself, and Tim Albans. Rick is the SAC of the FBI, who's just recently left. Tim Albans is the colonel from the state police. And myself, we know each other, we like each other, we respect each other, and we work together very, very well. We also had General Rice there, who was providing assistance from the National Guard side of things. And the four of us were sitting down every hour during the course of this event, coordinating resources. And even over the first few days, it was a very cooperative process. And then the prosecutors came to the table, and Dan Conley, the district attorney from Suffolk, as well as Carmen Ortiz, the U.S. attorney, who has ultimate authority over this case at this point. I think we all know and respect each other and get along very well. So I didn't see that fracture. I disagree with that characterization of it.
Okay. Well, just last week you were in Washington testifying on lessons learned before a Senate subcommittee there. We have heard you say this, you know, to us here in Radio Boston and in many other press conferences that you've given before about how grateful and proud you are of the degree of coordination that happened in that 5-day period, really. Right. But also, you know, in the weeks after the bombings, we found out, for example, that, you know, well before the bombings, the FBI, for example, had information about the Tsarnaev brothers. The Russians had sort of pointed to them as persons of interest. And, you know, the FBI went and did its questioning and decided not to pursue things any further. But I wonder if you think there's the need for that degree of coordination between federal and local law enforcement before the acute crisis of a major emergency.
Oh, there certainly is. And quite frankly, since 9/11, the situation has improved dramatically. We have a different relationship with all of the federal agencies, but particularly with the FBI. We work very closely together through this Joint Terrorism Task Force process that has brought us into the building, into the command posts. It's allowed local officers to see the inner workings of the prevention of terrorism threat that is vested in the FBI.
Do you think they should have shared the information about the Tsarnaevs with you back when they were first alerted to them?
Well, that's exactly what we're working on right now, and I liken this to an ongoing relationship. It's like a marriage. It's gone on for over 10 years now, and in the course of a marriage, you need to get certain things on the table every once in a while to straighten things out. Any relationship, especially one as intense as this, such large stakes on the table, requires a constant give and take. And so I think that there are things that we could probably improve on, and that's the reason I'm talking about this, that there are a few things that need to be tweaked in the system, and we're working on that right now. So I'm very happy not only with the response that the FBI had, but with their agreement to sort of look at things and make sure we improve on systems that we have in place.
Let's take a quick call here. Ron is calling from Boston. You're on the air, Ron.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to commend the commissioner for their actions, for the department's actions in the wake of the bombing. I was actually running the Boston Marathon as a guide for a disabled runner, and we got to about mile 25.5 before we couldn't go any further. The question I have for the commissioner is, to the extent that you're already planning for Boston 2014, have you thought about striking a balance between keeping people safe and not turning the marathon into basically a militarized zone so that the experience of being part of the Boston Marathon doesn't just erode away because of this terrible tragedy?
Ron, thank you so much for your call. Commissioner Davis?
Yes, that's a great question, Ron, and I think that that balance is exactly what we're trying to strike here. This is a soft target, but there are hundreds of events that happen every year that involve soft targets. And we don't want to turn this into a police state. First of all, there is no way to physically secure 27 miles of a route like the marathon. There's not enough police officers in Massachusetts to come here and secure that. So everything that we do is going to be a balancing act. We want to be cognizant of the threat. We want to make sure that we do everything we can to dissuade someone from thinking they can get away with this. But we're very aware that having an officer every 10 feet is not the way to solve this. And there's no piece of equipment, there's no camera, there's no computer, there's no electronic device that's going to pick out a terrorist when they come walking into an event like that. It requires an informed public, and the public has to work very closely with the public safety officials, and that's really what we're concentrating on.
Mm. Now, this question of how much security should we learn to live with, I mean, it brings back in my mind, of course, the events around the actual manhunt on the 19th of April. And there's so much we could talk about regarding that, but first of all, I mean, just tell us, what was that day like for you? Those, you know, 18 hours or so.
Mm. Well, it was a tough situation because we had been. The president had come in. There was a presidential visit. I got up at 4 o'clock that morning, got back to the house around 10:30, tried to get some sleep. I was awakened maybe half an hour later, and the report was that an officer had been killed in Cambridge. But the first information that we got back was that he was killed during an armed robbery, so we didn't think it was related. But several of my officers went anyway, and they started to generate information and work very closely with the state police and the Cambridge police, who were in charge of that scene. But as the hours rolled on, it became apparent to us that this may be a cell going active. This may be a terrorist, mm-hmm. A further terrorist attack. Clearly, after the shootout and the bombs started to be thrown, we realized that it was the same two, and we all rushed to the scene. I got there and met with Ed DeVoe, who was the chief in Watertown. We pulled the three officers that were the first contact officers with the Sarnieff brothers. They gave us a report as to what they saw and where the suspects were. And then we worked very closely with the state police and the FBI and the Watertown police, who knew the geography, to set up this 20-block perimeter, right, that ultimately led to his capture.
So take us into the conversations that surrounded the decision to issue that shelter-in-place request.
Sure. I do have to be careful about specific information, so I can speak generally about it along the lines of things that have already been in the press. But I can tell you that the governor and the mayor were directly involved in these conversations, and there was an enormous amount of intelligence. Some of it was true intelligence, and some of it turned out to be not true. Okay, some of the threats that were coming in, the leads that were being developed, they call it the fog of war on the battlefield, mm-hmm. but we very much experienced that. Unfortunately, at 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, as we were making decisions as to what to do with this information, all of that intelligence had not been vetted. And we were making a very serious decision about the transportation process in Boston at a time where we had a threat, but we didn't know how expansive that threat was. And a decision was made, and everybody came to consensus on it, that it was important to shut down the transportation system and ask people to stay home.
Yeah. So the reason why I'm asking you this, and I'm gonna, forgive me, but I'm going to ask you again, is because you yourself in testimony have said that we as a society need to strike a balance, you know, between giving law enforcement the tools that it needs to pursue, you know, someone like a violent bomber, so that the full weight of the law can be focused on that, and the fact that we are a free and open society. So, you know, I wonder how difficult was it to strike that delicate balance on the day?
Hmm. Well, it was very difficult to compile the information and to give the leadership, the political leadership, because Governor Patrick and Mayor Menino were in charge of the political bodies that were responsible for this and had to make the ultimate decision. Our job in law enforcement was to give them the best intelligence that we had at that time. They synthesized that. They debated it. We all weighed in on the debate. And I completely support the governor and the mayor for making the decision that they made. It was the intelligent thing to do, keeping in mind the public safety based upon the information that we had at that time.
Commissioner Davis, what was your toughest moment that week?
I think it was visiting with the victims. I think that, you know, overall, the police part of it, you know, it was tragic to see what happened to Sean Collier and to find out that he had been killed mm-hmm. because these guys needed a gun. When we first got to the scene, our information was that Dick Donahue was probably not going to make it.
MBTA transit officer.
Right. And so the fact that he's up and around is really a miracle. But I think that going to visit some of the victims was really the most difficult thing because you get a sense for how their life changed and how it's going to be continued to change over you know for the remainder of their lives. And that was the most difficult part of it.
And insofar as how you do your job today, what is the biggest lesson that you drew from that week?
Well, striking that appropriate balance, making sure that we're doing everything that we can to ensure that this doesn't happen again, and making sure that federal, state, and local systems are completely connected and synthesized, and also that we are putting the right number of people out and paying attention to the right things without turning every one of our events into a police state.
Yeah. Well, we've just got a couple minutes to go here, Commissioner Davis, and thank you so much for talking with us about the bombing, because as we said at the beginning of the conversation, it is just such a seminal moment in the history of our community. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder, I can imagine that there's some people out there who are listening to this and thinking, yes, the bombing was horrible. It was terrible. It was definitive. But at the same time, there is violence in neighborhoods in the city of Boston that the public and media don't pay attention to. I mean, there are people who might live in neighborhoods where they feel under attack every day.
Right.
I mean, for example, I believe there's a relatively new set of statistics that say that as of July 9th last year, the city of Boston had experienced 116 shootings compared to this year's 140 in the same time period, a 17% increase. Mm. So I guess, you know, what's your thought about that and what can be done for the neighborhoods in which this violence seems to be concentrated?
Right. Well, we need to be focused on the threat of violence everywhere. And we certainly have to pay attention to soft targets downtown. But the truth of the matter is, over the years, the numbers of people injured by violence is really that all of that is occurring in our neighborhoods. And so in the neighborhoods of Roxbury, Mattapan, and Dorchester, we are spending a large part of our time working with the community to try to reduce shooting activity. Just earlier today, two of my officers responded to a report of a man dealing drugs. As they got out of the car, he opened fire on them.
And they had to shoot back.
They fired back, and he was hit. And at this point in time, he's in the hospital. But the problem is that there are way too many guns in the inner city, and people have access to them, and they're using them indiscriminately, and it's resulting in a significant loss of life. So the Mayors Against Illegal Guns and the work that they're doing really does target the problem here. Not guns, but illegal guns. Making sure that we get as many of these guns out of the hands of criminals as we can.
Well, we just got a couple seconds left, but you mentioned about working with the community. Do you think community policing and those relationships are working as well as they can? I mean, there still is that 17% increase we're seeing.
There is, but I believe that was a spike that will flatten out. I think our overall numbers are down this year. We're down 6% in violent crime. We have a spate of an increase in shootings, but violent crime overall is down. This is working. This is because of community policing, because the community is working with us.
Well, Edward Davis is the commissioner, the police commissioner for the city of Boston. Commissioner Davis, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks so much for coming and spending some time with us.
Thanks for your time. My pleasure.
And listeners, Ed Davis shared a lot with us. I'd love to hear your comments and thoughts about it, so send those to us at radioboston.org. But stick with us, because coming up next, we'll hear from Bill Littlefield about the All-Star Game. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.